This is HPR episode 1679 entitled, New Year Show Part 6 of 8. It is hosted by HPR volunteers, and is about 133 minutes long. The summary is, New Year Show Part 6 of 8 from 3:00 to 5:30 UTC.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
But getting back to what I was saying, I mean, you know, I kind of think this newfangled aversion to gluten, you know, I've got a problem with that. If you are, obviously there are people who have this gluten allergy. It seems like a new thing to me. I never heard of peanut allergies when I was a kid. They must have existed.
That's because they were often not diagnosed properly, and people died of them before they could be.
I think you're right.
To say the reason we're finding all these quote unquote new allergies is because everybody else who used to have it just died, and then they didn't have it anymore.
We have much more sophisticated testing for allergens now. And we've been able to identify about 400% more potential allergens in the last sort of 20 years than in the previous 70 or so.
I've been plagued by allergies all my life, you know, and you know, which is an unusual spot for a farmer to be in. I mean, animal hair, hay, you know, it's none of that stuff is good for me. But I have developed tolerance as an adult, but my parents would have said, peanut allergy? We never heard of anybody with peanut allergy. It must be a made-up thing. And obviously there are people who have it. And the gluten allergy, one of my neighbor's wives, you know, who's in my parents' age group, she has it. So it's not like I'm saying it's a non-existent thing. However, I'm saying all these new age people coming out and saying, oh, yeah, some people have a gluten allergy, so nobody should consume gluten. That I kind of have to have a problem with.
You're hot and distorted and whatnot. Can you try and keep a level voice and possibly move your mic away from your mouth a little bit?
How's that? I moved the mic out.
Oh, that's fabulous. Now just maintain that tone.
Yeah, and probably this is a subject that I care about, so I've probably been more hot than I normally would be.
Yes, you're absolutely wonderful now. Just stay calm and just speak right on through it. Don't raise your voice.
Let's find another topic, sci-fi or free software or whatever. Because I've been anti-guy for what 45 minutes now. Let's do something else.
I do want to say one thing about the whole GMO thing, and it is that I look forward to the day when plants finally gain consciousness, because I want my salad to taste like fear.
The day of the triffids.
Well, I do remember we were discussing the subject at the first August Planet, and it's called I don't think Klaatu's still in there, but, you know, I expressed my opinion, and Klaatu told me I was insane. And I probably am. I know 330 is diametrically opposed to my opinion. While I'm on the subject, I do remember last year, and I was, 3:30, about 10 o'clock in the morning the next day, he was talking to Ken Fowler, and he said, yeah, 5150 was in here about 8 o'clock this morning, and he was drunk as a skunk, and damn if I wasn't.
Well, on the GMO thing, before we finally switch subjects, I get the fact that it's your living and all that. I mean, for me, I think the reason why there's an awful lot of opposition to GMO, Monsanto aside, they're just one of the GMO providers, is the fact that there's no independent testing. That this whole system is built around corporations getting their own way, and one of those major corporations is Monsanto. They want to get on the market and bypass all of the regulation, get it into the food chain all around the world. They want to get their stuff all around the world and bypass any safety checks that it's actually okay for humans. And it's right across the board. I mean, GMO, as far as I understand, different crops are at different levels. Some are much more safe, others are much more risky, but it's just all lumped into one GMO. And they don't want it advertised as such so that people can reject it. They want it sneaked into the board. I think all of that counts against GMO and against proponents like Monsanto. I think they could do an awful lot. I think GMO is a future, but it needs proper safety. It needs proper checks on board. And I don't think Monsanto are even remotely interested in that because they just want money, money, money.
So you're telling me this web Monsanto is interested in money? I just can't imagine that.
See, I mean, I got no problem with GMO, but a farmer's ability to produce a crop should be dependent only on the resources they have at hand, not on any company, and especially not on somebody who says you will only use our germ and our seed to produce crops once you sign an agreement with them. I mean, you shouldn't even have to sign an agreement. It should be a case of, do you want some seed that we will grow? Yes. Give me money, I will give you seed. That should be the sum total of the agreement. That's it. There should be no further complication.
I disagree. It's always been this way of hybrids. If your seed that you produce is exactly the same as seed that you bought, that's one thing. And especially if the seed has been developed by a governmental institution like a university. But just like a proprietary software agreement, if you sign up and say, if I buy this seed, I agree I will not replant from this seed, I will buy from you again every year, then that is the agreement that you have agreed to,
destroying your own ability to produce crops.
I mean, I did that just yesterday, you know, as a new producer in the eye of Monsanto with my seed seller. I went through on the web and said, yes, I agree, I will not take the output of this seed and replant it. And, you know, I do not see the problem with that agreement. Now, I do see the problem if the seed that I am planting was developed with my tax dollars and the seed that I'm replanting is exactly the same seed that I planted the year before. That is not the case with hybrids. Hybrids, you've got a 50-50 chance that what you're planning is going to be what you are given. but it's not the same thing with a non-hybrid seed. What you're planting is going to be essentially what you're given, and I have a huge problem if taxpayer money is used to develop that variety, and still they say you can't replant that seed. Okay, but with hybrids, I do not have that problem. My neighbors do not have that problem. I'm sorry. We understand this contract.
You're still putting your ability to grow crops under the control of somebody who does not tend your land.
Let me put it to you this way, 50. Here's the parallel of the agreement you signed. This would be the same as signing a contract with IBM or Apple or Microsoft, which says if you use our software, any documents that you produce, you cannot just redistribute without basically paying us to distribute those documents. You cannot produce a piece of music and actually sell that piece of music without paying us for the rights to actually sell that piece of music. This is the exact thing that we've fought against in the software industry for 30, 40 years now. Unfortunately, you guys have gotten stuck in the same exact trap that we fought so hard to get out of in the technology industry.
I would argue we were talking earlier today, the various text-to-speech engines. There's a company out there, you know, called Sistral, I think it is. When I was playing with TTS engines, makes absolutely beautiful and natural sounding text-to-speech because they have, you know, they have a resource behind them, and they do have a free Linux client, but it's in their agreement says, hey, you can use this on your local system, but you cannot use this to produce content for web that you are going to share with any third party. So in other words, let's say I were to design. Let's say I were to design a free software equivalent to Amazon Echo based on the Raspberry Pi. I'm certain there is. For people's own consumption, I could write the software and say, okay, here at this point, this is where you install a client. And I could say, you know, go over here and grab Sistral and plug it in, and for your own use that would be okay. But you could not you could not do podcast and post it up to HPR based on Sistral. Because that would violate the free software agreement. Now, I don't know if you paid for Sistral. Maybe you could. I think that is, you know, a perfect real-world analogy to Monsanto. You're saying,
no,
okay.
It isn't. It's a completely different model.
It's a good example of exactly what we've rejected. It's a perfect example of what we have as a community rejected, 50. That's exactly the kind of stuff we're fighting against.
Software with lowercase. If.
I don't know if it's an exact analogy, but most analogies aren't exact. I mean, it's fairly close as analogies go, because they usually are. But
is there a reason no one else is talking?
No, I don't know. I heard silence. I thought I'd take a turn. It kind of reminds me, the way you describe it, 50, it kind of reminds me of the Adobe suite, where you can pay for it and you can go on and use it and try to make some money using it, and if you're lucky at that, you can pay for it again. And in theory, if you're any good at what you do, it's going to pay for itself. So I don't think it's exactly the giving away your right to earn a living with it, but it certainly is proprietary, and that's not an analogy. Most of us, have rejected or try to reject or do our best to reject proprietary software and proprietary things in our lives. And this is one of the most proprietary things I've ever heard of, is the Monsanto foods. And that's in their agreement. I think what started the conversation for most people, though, was saying that they didn't want genetically modified food. And that's two completely different issues, I think, their business plan and their product, which both are pretty revolting to me, and it sounds like to the other people. So, I don't know. That's my two cents. I'll be quiet again.
Let me jump in. I'm going to stop and stomp on everybody. The thing that y'all are talking about, it comes down to if you believe the Stallman version of everything, which is basically everything should be free, or if you think of a more modified version and think that, you know, you can have proprietary in some things and other things you can't have proprietary. If we apply everything that we take from free software to this issue, shouldn't 50 be getting the seeds for free?
No, I disagree. I mean, it is exactly the Stallman model. I mean, if you go Stallman, you know, yes, I've got to reject this, but, you know, most of us say, yeah, we like Richard's ideal, but we want a computer we can use, and we accept a binary blob for our video cards, especially, you know, if we want to do games over Steam or whatever. You know, everybody on Steam's accepting a binary blob, and we see RMS as this ideal, but ideal that most of us say, well, you know, we're going to compromise our ideals a little to have a system that works. A lot of it, if we jump over to gaming, we jump on Windows. Steve's great, but it's still not the be all and end all. You know, if you want to have every game out there, you've got to be prepared to run Windows.
In fairness,
gaming doesn't have the opportunity to kill you. It doesn't have the opportunity to affect your health.
That doesn't matter. If you're just randomly applying the concepts from free software to everything else, you have to look at everything the exact same way. You can't put value over life over something else. If you're doing that, you have to you're not taking into consideration that when you just blanket apply the things that we get from free software to everything else.
Software absolutely can kill you. There's software in cars, there's software in pacemakers, there's software in weapon systems, in drones, in smart bombs. Software can absolutely kill you.
But I mean, Thistleweb,
you talk about kill you. You know, find me one instance of a GMO that's killed anybody. I mean, I can find you instances of hybrids, you know, natural combinations of species have killed people.
Monsanto is Skynet.
This is where the parallels break down, and this is why you can't really compare this to software licensing, is the agreement with Monsanto is not like a software agreement in that you're paying them for seed, but you're also agreeing to let them limit your ability to use something that otherwise wouldn't have any limits placed on it.
I'm sorry, XB, but I'm saying it's the exact same thing.
No, it's not.
As signing a EULA. You know, if I sign a EULA, I'm agreeing I'm not going to give Thistleweb a binary copy of my software.
No, it's not the exact same thing. What it is you're paying them for seed. And if you have some of that seed set aside, you're saying, they're saying you can't use that to extend your crop. If the seed is viable and can be grown, there should be no limit placed on your ability to use it in that regard. None whatsoever. And any limit placed on it is amoral.
I have to disagree. I mean, if it's not a hybrid and it breeds true, and when I purchase that seed, if I do not sign an agreement not to use that
regardless
seed,
of the strain,
then I have the right to use it. But if you know,
no, if I'm either way,
if I'm buying a hybrid, and when you do a hybrid, only 50% of the seed is going to breed true. But it's been like that forever. If you buy hybrid seed, you're signing agreement, I'm not going to save seed over and replant it.
No, see, this is the thing. The only reason you should be buying seed is if it is viable and it will grow. That's the only reason you should ever buy seed. It does not matter whether it's a hybrid strain or a true strain. If it's going to grow, that's why you buy it. Any limitations placed on you by the seller are completely and utterly ridiculous.
I have to disagree. I buy seed to maximize my profit just like any other business.
But at the end of the day, if the seed doesn't grow, you're going to have no profit. So
if the seed doesn't grow, generally if the seed doesn't grow, I'm going to get a rebate from the seller. If the seed is not resistant to chemicals or not resistant to pests, if I plant a crop of this seed that supposedly they can come over and spray with Roundup and kill the other plant growing within my seed, and if that doesn't work, I get a rebate.
Well, the seed is a man-made product, and therefore, if it doesn't perform exactly as it's designed to perform,
you should
get a refund. But it is man-made.
But even if this is the thing, even a GMO crop is still a biological process, and it should still perform a biological function. If you're signing an agreement that says if you have any left over, you can't grow it, it's exactly the same as being told by the company in the first place that that amount of it won't grow. Either way, you're not being given what you're paying for. And at the end of the day, it's limiting your ability to grow a crop.
I don't understand that FXB, because I should know how much seed I am planting per acre and have a pretty good idea how much seed I have to buy in that year. But I am not aware of any agreement that says, okay, you have the original seed in the bag you bought from Monsanto and you didn't plant it this year. And it says you can't plant it next year. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about harvesting seed from what you planted and replanting it.
That's what we're talking about.
You should never, ever be limited
from doing that.
If I got seed still in the bag, I can store that and plant it next year.
50. But that's the thing. It shouldn't matter where the seed comes from. You should never, ever be limited from planting it. It doesn't matter where it comes from.
50, first, turn your mic on, please. It's ear splitting.
I'm sorry. I don't think I have. I can speak with less excitement.
It's not working. But even when you speak with less excitement, your ear splitting is loud.
Okay. Well, I'm not in mumble. Let me see. Because I did have the amp all the way up because somebody told me I was way too low.
Anyway. You were going around and around and around the same topic. I've heard everyone say the same thing five times. So if you want to stay on the topic, let me ask you a question that hasn't been asked. How would you feel about labeling your product as GMO, not the seed that you plant, but the crop that you harvest, labeling that as GMO, and from every step in the process down the road until it gets to someone's dinner table, it has to be labeled GMO. How would you feel about that?
That depends. Do you actually have to label what kind of GMO seed, or is it just a GMO label that doesn't really mean anything?
Yeah, you got to remember, GM, everything that I know of that is planted today is GMO in the pure sense of the definition of GMO. There are products or plants that are genetically spliced. That could be a problem. But everything we eat, the wheat we eat has been genetically modified to grow in our climate and to grow at a better rate to make the farmers money. If we didn't have genetically modified mostly grains, we couldn't feed the world. So you got to define what you mean by GMO.
Pokey, let me turn that around on you, and I hope I've brought my mic down.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Okay, I'll do the next. But let's say there's people out there who would say, if you're getting a blood transfusion, you have to have it labeled by race, you know, because I don't want to, somebody want a black transfusion from somebody who's an Arab or
Negro. To do with
that's
it.
Exactly, because unless you can prove
if you had a bag of blood and it had to say, all right, the person who this blood came from was a genetically modified gene spliced clone grown in a test tube. Okay, then
doesn't have to be grown in a test tube. It's already been done. It's already been done. There are GMO humans.
Well, now my point is saying you got to prove it's going to have something to do with something. You know, you got to prove that
you can't GMO prove anything if you can't prove lineage. So you do have to keep track of it and find out where it's been and where it's going, or you can't find out if it's doing anything. Until you do that, you can just blame any problems you find on other things in the environment. So without trackability, there is no culpability. I'm sorry.
Remember as well that all the studies in the case of GM food are done by the companies wanting to sell GM food. Or funded by them, exactly. So they are predisposed to finding results that say GM food's perfectly safe. There's no independence there.
And a completely different topic. How's my mic now? Am I still too hot?
It hasn't changed at all.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Who here would like to pay money for my seed?
No one.
How's it going to be delivered is my question, because it's going to
matter. Anonymously, hopefully.
No. That depends Pokey, how much you want to pay, buddy.
I told Pokey and Peggy to get their own room earlier.
Can we pay to make sure it never gets delivered to anyone ever?
For the right price, yes. Yes, you can.
Or at least never gets delivered to a female.
So you're saying we have to pay for Peggy to get snipped?
I really like this idea. Let's do this.
Kickstarter.
Anything.
Go with Indiegogo, or go with GoFundMe. It does not have a cutoff date.
Kickstarter, you got to show a prototype.
I was just scrolling back up to find the name of it.
If we're going to clip him, there needs to be a cutoff date.
Ba-dum-bum.
Where was it? Was that billboard that said, please neuter your pets and weird friends?
Does it have to be clipped? Do we have to say that? Can't we use like a roto tool of some sort?
No.
Who asked you?
The Henderson Equine Castration Device?
Yeah, I don't think Fido has a choice in what we do.
Sounds like we have a fan of Distorted View in the house if they know about the...
Oh, yes. Jugu, my friend.
And how am I? Am I still too hot?
Yeah, is your mic in front of your face? Because if it is, move it off to the left or the right.
It's pretty much out of the way.
Stick it out next to your head.
Chicken nugget.
How's that?
Is it next to your head?
Through my mouth.
He's talking out of his ears.
Put it on the back of your head, 50.
It's gotten louder.
How's that?
Perfect.
Better.
Yeah, it's wrapped around the back of my head now.
It's better. It's tolerable.
Speak it in loudly. A different room.
Ask me about GMOs again.
50, how do you feel about GMOs?
No.
I don't think they should exist.
Monsanto is my god.
Monsanto should die.
I want Monsanto vegetables.
You eat enough Monsanto products, you become one.
Oh,
okay guys,
I am one.
I think we were past flogging this like a dead horse. Let's move on to some other topic. Hey, Pegwell, what do you got for another topic besides your seed?
Well, I was going to say, I got one.
If
you give Pegwell enough GMOs, you won't have to worry about a cutoff date.
Okay, I know not everyone does, but what's the best game everyone played this year?
Path of Exiles.
Space Team.
FTL. Raspberry Pi.
FTL's good.
Chess.
Cool Evolution. Wait, do you mean play on Linux or play in general?
I would prefer to say play on Linux, but I know not everyone uses it exclusively. I only play games on Linux, but I know not everyone does.
Cards Against Humanity.
All the cool people do, though.
Oh, CAH is good.
I would have to say the best game I played all year was Fruit Ninja with my little girl on my tablet.
Oh, my wife loves that game.
It is kind of a fun little no-brainer game.
We've been playing Space Team at our family get-togethers, and I have to thank Bobo Bex and HPR for that one. I had no idea what it was until her show.
Yeah, I haven't played that yet, but it sounds hilarious.
Yeah, I caught that HPR, and I gather it must be an unusual year. Cornominal and Bobex haven't been on. Way to go, 50 Kill the podcast.
Well, I wasn't here the whole time, so I can't answer, and I imagine most people weren't here the whole time to answer, so I thought you had logged more hours than anybody here.
Not in the times that they usually jump in. They usually jump in before New Year's in Britain, so I missed most of that.
It does seem like things have been a little quiet from the Crunch Bank camp.
Well, if they haven't been on, we wish them well just the same, because I think it's getting kind of late for them.
Has anyone blamed System D yet?
Yes.
In our heads, yes.
I still prefer the init system.
As do I.
But I'm playing with it in hopes that I will be able to migrate over to it.
I'd still rather stick with something that has log files I can understand.
That's the one serious complaint I have about that is those stupid log files.
Why the hell does it need binary log files?
Well, you can have them outputted into text. You could actually have it do text as a regular, as a default. Is you still have the binary, but you can do it. You could also do text.
Yeah, but are there any distributions that anyone knows of where it's set up to output text logs by default?
You have that option.
It's an option, but it's not actually the default.
I don't know. That would be up to the distribution maintainers.
I was going to say, are there any distros that are using UseLessD yet?
I haven't actually looked at that yet.
Well, I did opine earlier today, as pretty much a novice, that the resistance to System D is because a lot of Linux power users have put in a lot of time in educating themselves in the init system, and then here comes this whole new system that they have to learn, and I think that's a lot of the resistance may come from. Whereas people who just throw Linux up on a box and use it and don't get that far down to the nitty-gritty, they, as long as their system is working, they don't give a rat's either way.
Well, I mean, I think, 50, the thing is, the systemd isn't just trying to replace the init system. It's trying to replace a lot of tools a lot of us have invested time in fully understanding and figuring out how to use.
Hey, Dan, You seem to know a little bit about this. Do you know why it uses binary log files instead of reading so if you turn on text files, it'll output text files, but is there any reason why it doesn't read those and switch over completely? Or are binaries that much faster?
Just to piss you off.
I can actually answer that some. Is part of the reason they switched to binary log files was they aren't just binary, they're also signed. So part of the theory is to make
security files less tamperable.
Exactly, FXP.
Hey, yeah, definitely a legitimate use case. I just hate waiting what seems like half an hour every time I want to see the last 10 lines of the log.
It's not going to piss me off, KT. I never get that low in the system.
Yeah, see, I can understand having that as a feature, but I'd still rather have the default be human-readable log files.
I'd rather have the default be both.
I'm going to butt in here, gentlemen, and say I'm going to call it a night. It's been fun. It's been the last few hours. It's been great fun. Happy New Year to all, and I'm going to call it a night.
This looks way too early for you. You're not pissed drunk yet.
I think you ran out of booze.
I'm not going to comment on that. Suffice to say, you're not seeing what I'm seeing through my eyes. I'm drunk enough. Suffice to say, I'm drunk enough. So that's 24 now? Half past? Yeah, something like that. As I say, my eyes are bleary. I'm calling it a night. Happy New Year, people. It's been fun.
Happy New Year.
Via con queso.
Happy New Year.
And have a good one, man. New Year file managers.
Later, Tesla Web.
Did I mention Nautilus and the split? No, I'm not going to go there. So, have a nice evening. And it's been fun.
A good one, man.
So, my thing about the journal is the idea of signing and basically sequentially signing all the entries in the journal, it sounds like a great idea, but here's the thing. It's a solution looking for a problem. Have we ever actually encountered a situation? Has anybody got a situation where log files were corrupted or modified in such a way as to have a problem with the integrity of them, that, you know, as a result of something going wrong on a system?
Probably not something we'd encounter.
Not something going wrong, probably more of authentication logs being modified after someone has compromised the system.
Yeah, and it's something that I don't think we'd come across as desktop users, but for big systems and big data, that might be a serious issue to contend with.
Okay, let me put it this way. I work in an environment with over 5,000 Linux servers. Not once have we had that kind of an issue.
None of your servers, not one of them's ever been owned?
Not that I'm aware of. There may be on the outside of our firewall, but those are, you know, in the DMZ outside, and it is assumed that those servers could be breached at any time because they are not completely protected. Anything inside our firewall, if you can get in past our, can get in through our security, good luck to you.
Well, that's what I mean. If you've never had a system that's been owned at all, then you're obviously not the use case for this. But you know, plenty of servers out on the internet have been compromised, and you know, plenty of them have been Linux servers. So this might make sense in that scenario.
Someone I know, one time he did have a system that the local log files were corrupted, but he had off or secondary logging going on as well, and the only reason he noticed something was he noticed weirdness between the two logs.
Yes, exactly. And that's the typical implementation in an enterprise environment, is that you do redundant logging where you actually have a log server set up to actually archive all the logs in real time from your server environment. So if there's a chance that you see anything that looks like a disagreement, you compare to your archive source and you look to see if there are differences. So that's really why I say the journal is a solution looking for a problem.
I think we're missing the most important question that I haven't seen anybody else ask, though. The big question is, are we going to get a systemd emacsd, or is emacs going to get a systemd mode?
Ooh.
I lean toward the latter.
I thought Emacs was the original systemd, that really all they were doing was stripping out functionality out of Emacs.
I don't know, but all I know about systemd so far is that I've learned to convert my init scripts that I wrote to run with systemd.
Okay, okay, now I see that. I'm hitting the wrong key. I was hitting a mouse key. We missed the 30-minute mark. Greetings to Newfoundland, Labrador, Canada, St. John's, Conception Bay South, Corner Brook, and Bender, about 12 minutes late.
Incidentally, all those cities are in Newfoundland.
I think I'd like to visit Conception Bay.
No, you wouldn't. They speak French.
It doesn't mean what you think it means, man.
I mean, we had this discussion earlier today. We were dumbfounded why anybody would do a 30-minute break, and then, you know, we have so many places on a 15-minute break. Just why?
Well, pull out your globe and look at where it is. It's right in the middle.
Yeah, but if you got to talk to anybody, Cobra, you know, you're, you know, I can see an hour adjustment, but I cannot see a partition of an hour adjustment.
I didn't do it, so meh.
It's all arbitrary anyway, so whatever.
Well, I think at a conclusion that we've come to, you know, during the show in the past, let's just have one time zone, then everybody adjusts when their day starts.
I think everybody should use UTC. It would make life so much more simple.
Like it has so far?
It's made my life more simple.
I don't know how many people here listen to the No Agenda show, but Adam Curry made that point at one point during the show that everyone should use UTC, and he followed that up with, do you know, does anybody make a UTC watch? And it took him a minute, and he realized the stupidity of this, what he said.
Someone sent him one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can get radio control watches that will display UTC if you want.
Or you could just get a watch and set it to UTC.
No, I mean, have you not seen a radio control clock?
Yeah, I've seen them. They set themselves, yeah.
Yeah, but they set themselves by a signal sent from a series of atomic clocks. But you can set them to whatever zone you're in or against UTC.
Or, say, a smartphone where you're getting the same thing over the network. Yeah, I've got one of those clocks hanging on the wall, and it's got a little box that I can set outside that, through a radio link, tells it the outside temperature, and it's right about half the time.
My phone gets the time from my cell carrier, but I'm not allowed to tell my friend what time it is.
Did you sign an agreement that said you wouldn't tell your friends what time it is?
Yeah, I did. And I'm okay with that, damn it.
Oh, I celebrate that. I mean, you know, as long as you make a greater profit from not telling people what time it is.
No, just by knowing what time it is, I make a greater profit. I don't get nothing to do with my friend. He can buy a sundial. I don't know.
So how many of you use UTC on a regular basis as for your own personal time?
I don't use it for my personal time, but I try to send out the HPR book club stuff in UTC because everybody's in a different time zone.
And then we all got to convert back. So I had that spreadsheet set up where I could calculate, you know, one time zone from another time zone. And it's been sitting there for a week. I could have on every line put in, yeah, I was going to put in Eastern time and, PhD 4 time. And I just never got around to doing it.
When I was little, I had a cheap watch. It had a ring on the outside of it that spun around. And the ring was, you spin the ring to the plus or minus GMT time. I think it was GMT at the time. That's what it said in the manual. And you spin that around to the plus or minus GMT time. And whatever your watch is set to, you always set it to GMT. And then when you spin the dial, it tells you what and it would spin the face underneath the dials as well while spinning the outer shell. So you could always spin, and you never had to reset the watch till the battery died. Actually, I think that was a wind-up one, so the battery never died.
You not believe how much time I've spent screwing around cheap watches in the last 10 years, and you put them on your arm, and the band goes to hell, and the thing falls off, and... You know, even if you got one of those hoity-toity, you know, pseudo Twist-O-Flex bands, I'm sitting there squinting with a pair of needle-nose pliers trying to put those back together again. So, you know, I have come full circle into I'm going to do the time off my smartphone because I just can't put in the hours to keep a cheap watch together.
Oh, just take it to the dead gum Walmart down the road from you and get the feller at the jewelry store, jeweler part to put the band on for you. They do it for free if you buy the band from
them. Yeah, but when the band comes apart, it's up to me to put it back together again.
No, it's not up to you. You take it back and you go, hey, this fell apart. I got it from here. Here's my receipt. Put it back together.
Yeah, but be in there every week.
But then you need to get a better watch. Have you heard of this shit called duct tape?
Oh, yeah,
you
man.
You can't tuck it.
I guarantee you most of my equipment is held together by duct tape.
Well, what kind of watch bands are you buying? I don't wear a watch personally anymore, but I have a watch that's attached to my backpack, and that's really the only time I need to know what time it is when I've got my backpack on and my phone or whatever other mobile device is in the backpack. Sits right there on the strap, and I just pull it down, look over, and look at it. And it's got a Velcro band on it, and I just attach it to the strap. If you get like a Velcro band, you can put it on your belt or something, and even if you put your seatbelt on, whatever, it usually stays together pretty well, unless you hang up on something.
I cannot get anything to stay together. I mean, the leather band, the Velcro band, the metal clasp band that's not Twist-O-Flex, the Twist-O-Flex, none of those suckers work. I had the Amazon watch with the secret bars in there, you know, the... to indicate the time, and none of it ever stayed together for me.
Do you keep it on your wrist?
Yeah, exactly. You say on your backpack. If I don't keep a watch on my wrist, what's the point of having a watch?
Well, put the watch on your belt, 50.
Well, if I'm gonna put the watch on my belt, why don't I reach in my pocket and get my cell phone, which is always perfectly accurate.
Well, if you, I don't know. That's why I don't carry a watch anymore.
Exactly.
I don't know. I miss the days when I just had to tell the time by, the sun is still out. Okay. Wait, the sun's going down. I better get home.
I can still tell what time of day it is by where the sun's at.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to do it. It's like I can't see to do anything. I might as well go home and drink a beer.
Or 8.
Or if you're official web 24.
Do you got a webcam in my house? I'm up to 8.
No, it's the 5150-o-meter. We got it. And there's a web page for it. There's an app for that.
Actually, I keep telling Peter one of these days, I'm gonna get that Arduino Shield with the breathalyzer, and we'll tie it into kernelpanicoutcast.org so that people can see how faced I am as we go through the evening.
Well, we can tell you've had a couple, because first off, it started this morning. You had your mic positioned and you were really low and really quiet, and then you got louder the next time I heard you, and then you were louder the next time I heard you, and then you got super loud, and now your mic's on the back of your head?
Well, see, that's a tech thing. I started out, you know, it's easier for me to see who's on, you know, who's talking on the PC, because the, you know, there's a lot of people on it. It scrolls past my screen on Plumble on the phone. So it's like, I want to record at the same time. So well, I'll do that, all that on the PC. It's much easier. And I said, well, I've got this wireless headset, so when I go to the can or whatever, I can still hear people, and that's the whole problem with quality. And so I was down in the hole all day long until I jumped on the phone, and that actually was what got posted, because and so I took the first 4 hours. I didn't do much to it. And, you know, if people want to hear you, they can turn sound up. I had the first 3 hours on a recording. I said, well, I could do some manipulation and do leveling and do compression and bring myself up where I'm not as loud as everybody else, but at least I can be heard. So I've got that if anybody wants to listen to it. I do not recommend it.
Hey, 50, I just want you to get that Arduino breathalyzer thing for next year so we can have that information logged on ThistleWeb as the podcast goes on.
So you want me to send one to ThistleWeb?
I think we'll crowdfund that one.
I think we should all have one, and then the more breathalyzed we get, the more it pots our mic down.
What we need is a Raspberry Pi logged into the Mumble chat that reads out ThistleWeb's blood alcohol every 10 minutes.
And blows bubbles every time he goes up a decimal.
Yes. This was exactly my point. Before you podcast, you got to blow into a tube. I'm certain Peter would be ecstatic if I would set that up.
Yeah, eSpeak tells you, no, you can't podcast, you're too sober.
Have we lost Peggy?
Is he finding himself?
He got scared from his clipping.
If we're lucky.
I think his blood alcohol level and him hit the floor.
Oh, not Pegball. I don't think he ever gets messed up like that. 3:30 maybe. I see 3:30 in Oddcast Planet, and 3:30 if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, and I mentioned this earlier, I remember last year about 9 o'clock in the morning, the next morning, you were talking to Ken Fallon and said, yeah, 5150 was in here about an hour ago, and he was drunk as a skunk. Damned if I wasn't.
Wish I could be drunk as a skunk right now.
You could be. You just got to drink more.
Nah, I can't drink when I'm sick, man.
I didn't realize you're sick. I'm sorry.
My wife is a chinchilla, and every now and again, I'll give that thing like a teaspoon of beer or wine or something, and he really enjoys it.
You should migrate him to hard liquor.
Kind of like a weasel, isn't it?
No, it's more like a fat squirrel.
Eat it!
Oh, squirrel's good eating.
I would eat the thing, but my wife would kill me. She likes it.
Chinchillas are hilarious, man.
No, they're not. They're retarded. They don't do a thing. Excuse me, I probably shouldn't say retarded. That word's not PC anymore. The thing's an imbecile. It does nothing.
They're nocturnal. They don't do anything whilst you're looking or have the lights on.
I know. I've lived with the thing for a number of years. I'm very aware that they're nocturnal, and I'm very aware that they like to keep you awake when you're trying to sleep. I'm all about the chinchilla. I get it. But even when they're awake, they don't do anything useful.
I tell you, I've been rebuilding my... I lost most of my firearms, so I've been rebuilding my hunting firearms and... Oh, just the one time picking up a round bale, I saw this whole covey of bobwhite quail, and I haven't seen them since in there. I probably could kick them back out of there. It's like, oh, you're stupid. You should have brought the shotgun with you because there is nothing as tasty as a bobwhite quail. And then this afternoon... down on my cut feed, there had to be 1,000 mallard ducks down there. See, you know, for ducks, upland game birds, that's a little weird because as a landowner, I can hunt, static species like pheasant and rabbit and all that. But should I want to take a duck, then I would have to buy a hunting license and attach to it a duck stamp. So generally I do not take duck, but man, that it would have been. And if you shoot a duck, you got to shoot steel shot. That's a hassle. I don't like to do that. I don't want to do that to my guns. But when I picked up ammo the other day, that was the only thing available. So
hey, I got a question.
Please.
Is a duck stamp anything like a tramp stamp?
No, actually, a duck stamp is usually very artistic, and this was another thing that lost in the fire. This was brought over from a hunting cabin that we owned the property, we didn't own the cabin, and eventually it was given up to us when the guys out of Major City in Kansas got too old to come out anymore. But we retrieved the artwork, and the artwork...
Ooh, ooh, Happy New Year's.
Got a Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year to Atlantic Canada and Cobra 2, and hey, who did that?
Who do you think?
And that includes St. John, La Paz, San Juan, Santo Domingo, and Halifax. Hey, 50, I just built a new gun.
Please, tell me all about it.
Well, it won't take long. It's an air gun. It's a Crossman. It started its life as a Crossman, 1322? Yeah, that's it. It's the 1322. But I kept modifying it and modifying it. I basically have a Crossman backpacker, which would be like a 1389G, I think, or 2289. So pretty much like that, except it's all custom with, like a nice trigger job and hand ground triggers, and everything's custom fit and all stainless steel bolts. And it's really nice. It looks great, and it doesn't shoot real great. I think I get a bad barrel.
Yeah. They're supposed to be just as good. Black Friday, they had 20% off in Walmart on firearms. I got a couple Mossberg 88, and a lot of the stuff is compatible with the Mossberg 500. The main difference is instead of wood hardware, you've got all fiber plastic hardware, which if you're stomping around the woods all day long, that's really an advantage.
Now, Cobra 2, I didn't say bent barrel. I said I think I have a bad barrel. I think it has a bad crown. So it's okay. It's a 14-inch barrel, and I really wanted a 12-inch. So I think I'll just have to buy a 12-inch barrel. They're pretty cheap from Crossman.
Bro, I was just giving you a hard time.
Yes, I know.
Or hacksaw.com.
Yeah, but then I'd have to recrown it, and I'd need a crowning tool, and I don't have one. And I don't want to buy one because they're pretty expensive. I think they start around $50, and they use it once, maybe twice in your life.
But it's something you could pass on to the kids.
It's true. Then again, a Crossman barrel for a 12-inch barrel is probably $6.50.
You don't need to pay for things. You need to pay for experiences. What kind of experience are you going to get if you just buy the barrel instead of making the barrel?
There are other experiences I'd rather pay for. It didn't come out right, did it?
No, it didn't.
Not at all.
And they never have real names.
Hey, but the good news is I can pay for experiences now because I found a new job.
Congrats. Sweet.
Yeah, I don't know I don't know how widespread the word got, but I got laid off from my job back in September, and I was out of work for a couple of months. And I found a new job in early December, and it is fantastic. And it is so much fun, and it is so great. I am literally building the internet. I work for a company that makes ocean fiber optic cables from transcontinental cables. It's fantastic.
Cool.
Unfortunately, I have to tell you that your cable is not here, sir.
No, not yet. Well, some of it is. I'm sure some of it is. It's everywhere.
No, we're strictly Corning.
Corning makes fibers. The fibers are in the middle of the cable, and Corning doesn't make cables.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
So our cable may very well be there, because I believe that Corning is just one of the one of the fiber benders. I'm not certain about that. They may not even be one. I don't know. And you know, much like Brome, I'm not going to say the name of the company, but it's an awesome one.
Oh, kudos for you, man. Congrats on getting off your ass and out of unemployment and helping pay for the rest of the people that are still on it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, no problem there. But I don't pay for anyone who's on unemployment. They've paid for that themselves. That's how they got on it in the first place. They paid in, and they can take out. And I don't hold anything against anyone who's on unemployment who paid their dues. You gotta pay it forward anyway.
Good, because I already paid mine, and I'm on it.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, no, I'm not sorry. I'm in school.
Pokey also is someone who's on a Social Security income because I've been labeled as medically disabled right now. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure for something like that anyway.
Well, I think in your case, Lord D, you know, it's all going to come back in spades with innovations.
And one thing I didn't mention earlier for the guys who were around was the kind of how dramatic the weight loss I actually went through. I would say about September of 2013, I want to say I was at 270 pounds roughly, and at my lowest, I hit about 141 pounds before I started to have an upswing in my weight again.
And that's not the way to lose it. There's probably a bunch of us in the channel that are jealous of that kind of weight loss.
Yeah, I made a really bad joke about that earlier in the year. One of my friends or one of my sisters, I don't remember right now, was like, what's the best way to lose weight? And I said, get cancer, lose 130 some pounds, and they threatened to hurt me.
Well, I'm weighing myself on a Hal scale. I got out, salvaged from the local general store, and it did come back to me. My dad, who couldn't walk at the end of his life, I'm only 5 pounds lighter than he was.
I'm sure you guys have all heard the old joke, how do you lose 230 pounds of unsightly fat?
Get divorced.
Yeah.
Shoot Peggy?
Oh!
And one other thing out of the whole course of this year that was really awesome was maybe about a month after my diagnosis, one of my sisters went out and got the esophageal cancer ribbon tattooed on her.
And like your thing, they were talking about the time I got home, or D. Because does the one doctor tells you you're not going to get better? And it, on the one side, I can think of, a year ago when they misled you, it may have been intentional to try to keep your hopes up, but maybe there's another doctor out there who knows more.
And I definitely plan on, sometime here in 2015 to do some looking and get a second opinion, but that's just, a matter of time right now.
I think all of us who say you're in dire straits, we would welcome a chance to kick the crap out of any doctor who tells you you're bad off.
What color is that ribbon? Or what colors if it's multicolored?
It's a blue ribbon.
Shoot, I was going to say, if we get to pick the color of the ribbon, I would have said black, and we go around going. You guys catch that, or did I just do that for my own amusement?
Is it Ken that's splitting the New Year's show out into episodes?
I am afraid so. I thought it was going to be me, but things did not fall into place. I hope so, and we are constantly screwing Ken, I'm afraid.
No, I'm just impressed. It looks like he's put the first one out already.
He did. And like I said, my audio was way low in that, and I did an alternative, and where I brought my audio up and not say anything about Ken, if anybody says, well, this is crap because a quarter of it we can't hear what the hell was going on, I've got an alternative video, but I don't want to go up against Ken. So take what you're given and smile.
I always do.
Oh man, mad props out to, Ken for the work he does. And, if he, takes a version where he just cuts a chunk and releases it, hey, I completely understand, with his, probably 30-some hours he's going to have to end up dealing with.
Ken is basically a legend.
Oh, more than a legend.
Which is probably why I deserve a slap from him.
I'll second that.
No, because I did actually meet him in person about 3 years ago and promised to do an HPR and haven't actually finished it yet.
Well, here you are doing an HPR right now.
I don't count the New Year's shows. Because, we can all hop in and say hello at least.
Do you count the audiobook clubs?
Oh, yeah, because that's got a distinct subject to it.
But we can all just jump in and do those.
Well, only if you've all read the book.
Or listened to it, as the case may be.
Oh, listened, yeah, but still.
You should listen to this most recent one. It's awesome. We've had a bunch that have been awesome. We had very few that weren't unanimously enjoyed.
I listened to all of them, man.
Hey, Pokey, have you guys done Dead Mech by chance yet, or Dead Mech, The Americans, and Metal and Ash?
No, and I don't think we're gonna, because I believe all three, I've never heard of Metal and Ash, but I believe the other two have been pulled down from the internet. They don't exist anymore as audiobooks.
Well, if I can find my archive copies, because I'm pretty sure you released those under a Creative Commons license, so if I have them, I can still give them to you guys, so I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, they were Creative Commons, and we could do that, but one of the rules is that the book is, freely available to everyone, so if they were up on, something that was going to stick around, archive.org or your own website, that would be cool, that would be fine, or up on Cobra 2's BitTorrent site.
Well, you said, if I can track down my copies, I will get them up on Archive or something.
Yeah, we could do that then. As long as they're freely available, then that's fine. That's our only rule, is that they're free of charge, so that anyone who wants to can participate.
I'm sorry, I was in the other room. I heard my name.
Yeah, what's your BitTorrent site?
Right now, it's Epic Fail.
Oh, no, really?
Well, I mean, it still works. The tracker runs and everything, but there's nothing behind it. It's just stale.
Oh.
The back end works, though.
All right.
Other than that, it needs automation and community,
There you go. We should clone Ken Fallon, because he takes the place of automation, and the community just surrounds a guy like him. It's awesome.
There can be only one.
It'd probably only take a couple of the bash scripts to get everything automated and whatnot, and I have no problem paying for the hosting. I'm doing it because it's something that I want, but, whatever. It's cctracker.org. But I'm pretty sure that everything is stale, and it is deleted most of the users if they were there at some point because of failure to log in and keep their username active.
Oh, okay.
But I can fix that because, admin.
Right on. That's why you do admin.
Yeah, I just never found anybody else who I could, trust with given access to a server that I wouldn't, it was always me by my lonesome.
Yeah, I hear you.
But I don't know the context in which you're referring. What do you need it for?
Lord D was offering up copies of a book that was released under an audiobook that was released under the Creative Commons, but the author has removed all of the copies that he had ever posted from the internet, so it's not something you can find anymore.
So if he has copies given to me, I will make sure that they are out there somewhere.
If it's CC licensed, shouldn't you be able to just stick it on archive.org?
Yes and no.
Archive.org, it depends on the license, doesn't it?
No, well, yes and no. But even if the license allows it, archive.org will take content down at the owner's request.
Has there been any explanation as to why he took it down?
I think so. My brother was a big fan of his, and he said he was following the guy's blog or something, and that the guy just wasn't making any money off of it, and that was his whole idea, was to generate revenue by giving a couple, like, you know, your first one's free type of books away.
Oh, okay.
I think I remember following this when it was going on, too. I think he, at least through private communications, made it sound like he was taking it down because he didn't want the old audiobook versions hanging around the free ones when there were supposed to be new audiobook versions coming out through the new publisher.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I listened to Dead Mech. I never heard America or Americas or whatever it was called. I never heard that one. But Dead Mech was decent for the most part.
Well, honestly, I have to be honest with you, fellas. I don't even care if it infringes on copyright. I will bend and break it to whatever, because I'm in Canada now, and they don't care so much.
Oh, no, but the audiobook club is our rule is that it has to be legally free, available for free of charge, legally, to anyone who wants to participate.
And there is a lot of stuff that fits that scope.
Yes, there is an insane amount of really good music that is absolutely free for anyone to grab. You just have to know where to look.
Yep, audiobooks too. There's many websites. We had, I think, 4 shows in a row where we didn't go to podiobooks.com for a book.
Where'd you get them from then?
One was Klaatu's book. One was Lost in Bronx's book. One we got from an H.P. Lovecraft fan site, and the other would have been LibriVox.
Ah, cool.
Those shows haven't been posted yet. I'm way behind in my editing, and I apologize to everyone for that. X1101 is going to give me a hand with some editing. I've finally swallowed my pride and admitted that I need some help getting caught up. So hopefully we'll get one posted shortly, because I am way behind and I'm wicked sorry.
And sometimes it can get really interesting where you can get a free copy of a book, say, from Gutenberg Project, but you have to get it from, like, the Australian version of the Gutenberg Project because you can't get it in the American version.
Oh, I haven't run into that, but yeah, I can see where that would be problematic.
I can't get 1984 off of stuff up here.
That is, in fact, the book I had in mind there.
It's incredible how accurate that book wound up being. I was just thinking about that the other day, how you know, he predicted that everybody's TV would have a little camera in it and be watching all of us. And everybody was so paranoid about that for so long. And then when it really happened, nobody noticed it.
And then the X-Bone happened.
No, forget your TV. Everybody's got a camera on their phone and on their laptop. And everywhere you look, there's cameras. And, you know, how many pieces of black tape do you see over cameras? You don't see any. So, I mean, it's everywhere.
Well, that's because using blue painter's tape is so much more efficient. It doesn't leave behind as much residue.
Yeah, for sure, but you still don't see anybody else doing it.
Lightweights. You snip the wires if you want to do it right.
Yeah, my new job, there was rumors that they were not going to allow phones with cameras on them on the premises. So I was seriously contemplating gouging the camera out with a soldering iron.
Isn't it true that DoD policy used to see Furbies as a security threat?
I have no idea.
I believe it was. They weren't allowed anywhere within any military defense site for some reason.
And it's because if they were in a room where there was classified discussion going on, Furby would recognize and still repeat things that it heard.
Oh, does it? It was a listening thing?
Well, they weren't for long because kids started teaching them how to swear. But, yeah.
Oh, that's completely unpredictable. Whoever would have guessed?
Yeah, and then when they removed that ability, some guys actually started selling mod kits to reinstate it.
That's silly.
Yeah, but it was kind of fun.
One of the creepiest images I've ever seen is of a dissected Furby where they stripped all of the skin and fluff off of it and just left the metal skeleton. Just bizarre.
Have you ever seen like what circuit benders do? They get like electronic equipment and just mess around with the electronics and make weird sounds.
Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of neat. I was going to ask if you'd ever seen Five Nights at Freddy's. Is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar, but a guy about 6 years ago took several Furbies that had been modified to produce different tones and then made like a winding mechanism so that they played them in a distinct sequence and called it a Furby Gurdy.
That's a clever name. Weird.
It was a very weird piece of gear. You'd probably find it if you Google it. It was just utterly bizarre to look at.
Why should we Google it when you can Google it for us and put the link in the show notes?
Because I only suggest Googling things that I know are completely unique and have no chance of coming up with weird results whatsoever.
How many things like that can actually exist? What, two?
You'd be surprised.
Yeah, man, clever little nicknames like that have been known to spawn entire communities of lunatics.
Yeah, just look at the name of the Unix random number generator.
Well, I kind of feel like asking a classic stink dog question. What has everyone been hacking on lately?
Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, me too. Mostly been messing with mine using it as a server.
My HTPC.
I was about to... I'm getting around to it eventually when I get the other stuff off my plate. I was thinking of taking my Raspberry Pi and making it a little game box on the back of the TV, which is why I was asking about the PS3 controllers earlier, the wireless ones.
Oh, right. What, doing, like, emulating old systems like the RetroPie setup?
Yeah, exactly. RetroPie is the one I was looking at.
I'm not sure if I've heard of too many people using a PS3 controller with that setup, but I shouldn't think it's too hard to get it to work.
No, and if it doesn't, I mean, there's a million other cheap controllers out there. I have a few already.
If you really want to go the retro route, you can actually get
one.
Yeah, you can get the... They look like classic controllers, but they plug in USB.
They are like classic controllers. They've been dissected
NES
modified. And,
oh, I know, but I mean, there's modern reproductions as well, but they look exactly the same.
One that is a reproduction that I've seen, I don't remember if it's an NES or an SNES, but it's a knockoff that is Bluetooth has Bluetooth connectivity.
I've seen both, and also a Mega Drive controller.
See, the problem with the retro controllers, though, and if you haven't used one in a while, and for a while, you may forget this, is Nintendo Thumb happened for a reason, and those controllers really, really hurt your fingers.
Yeah, but you're getting the full experience, man.
I don't need the full experience, I just need the entertainment value. And I don't even need that, I just want to show my kids what it was about.
Exactly.
They don't need to learn about Nintendo Thumb, seriously.
Back we played until we got RSI and we liked it, damn it.
My wife literally got RSI. It ended her piano playing career from Nintendo.
I think my cousin's husband really, really messed up his arm playing this one guy on my old Amstrad.
Yeah, you just get yourself like a PS2 or PS3 controller or something that looks and feels just like it, and you don't have that problem.
Yeah, and no, I'm pretty sure like most of the modern console controllers, at least from the not the most recent, but definitely from the last console generation, you can use all of them under Linux without too much trouble.
Yeah, I think so.
Although you do have to watch out for third-party controllers.
talking about this whole retro gaming thing and showing your kids Pokey, I ran across an article a while ago where it talked about a guy, his son was starting to get into gaming, and what he did, he sat his son down, starting with the Atari 2600, and then moved up through the generations, and his kid is now like a huge fan of the retro style games, and this kid beat Spelunky on like the hardest method it took at like 7 years old.
That game was so impossible. Yeah, see, I'd like to do that, but I don't think any of my kids would have the patience for it, nor would I. I just, there's a handful of old games that are really fantastic that should not be overlooked.
See, this is the thing. I think, am I weird, or am I the only one that thinks as modern yes. parents, okay, yeah, apart from that, I think as modern parents, like, anyone who has kids now should, who is old enough to know something about gaming history should teach their kids a little of that before letting them play games?
No, not really. I don't think you should impose it on them. If they're not into it, they're just not into it. I mean, like, you know, I try showing my daughter, like, old comedy, you know, or old movies, and she's just not into it all the time. Or she thinks, oh, that's a dad thing. Or, so it doesn't always work. You shouldn't make them do it, but, you know, show it to them, and then if they're into it, they're into it.
I mean, that's what I mean, is you don't ram it down their throats, but you say, look, you know, all this stuff you like so much now, here's a little about where it all came from.
Yeah, I don't know. Good luck with a 14-year-old boy talking about, here, play Missile Command, or you know, you can't play Call of Duty anymore until you've logged at least 3 hours of Jungle Hunt.
Well, see, actually, Pokey, I know kids would love that.
See, Pokey, that's where, you know, the thing is this guy did it with his son when he, you know, starting at like 3 or 4, you know, not trying to get a 14-year-old to do it who's already been exposed to the modern graphics and can't see past graphics for gameplay.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Plus, I mean, we're a generation of people who, some of us have got kids that are running up to the TV and getting frustrated when they bang on it and it doesn't do anything because they don't realize it's not a touchscreen.
Wait, we missed a half hour. Happy New Year. Sorry. Happy New Year's to Venezuela, Caracas, someone else do that one. Mark, oh, geez. Who can read these things? Barquisimeto? Maracaibo, I think is how you do that one.
Happy New Year's to all the places Pokey couldn't pronounce.
Pasty White, sorry about that. So, speaking of, like, retro games, what are some retro games that should not be missed?
The original Metroid, the original Castlevania, and the original Legend of Zelda is debatable.
No, it's not.
So I would say, well, I think it's debatable when you look at the SNES one of Link Between Worlds.
Well, that doesn't mean you don't play the original. I mean, original Legend of Zelda is one of the greatest games ever.
Without question, Another World.
And it holds up. What's Another World?
It's an absolutely classic game, and I'm disturbed that you've not heard of it.
What system?
All of them.
Huh, okay, what's it about?
It's very difficult to describe, but it starts with...
Well, your mic just went dead. What is it?
I'm going to ask real quick, FXB, are you in the States, or... I thought you'd said otherwise earlier. Maybe
I'm in the Southeast UK.
Maybe the game you're talking about was not in the US, and that's why me and Pokey don't know about it.
No, it was everywhere, and it was an... It was on every platform. It's very peculiar in that respect. The reason it was so widespread platform-wise is because it visual concept.
I'm sorry, I keep cutting out. Bad, man, yeah.
No, it's down to my keyboard again. I'm sorry. I'll find a Wikipedia article, but basically, it was an adventure platformer that.
Oh, I've seen this game. That game's bullshit. What are you talking about?
No, it's not. This you is haven't that played game it enough.
Where you fall, try not to fall in the water, and a little weird worm thing jumps at you and kills you, and you try to jump, but the timing's all screwed up. Dude, that game's bullshit.
No, it ain't. You just didn't play it enough.
The timing is totally crap. There is no time. You hit the button and you wait a second and a half to jump. And the next time you hit the button, you wait a second and a third. And the next time it's 2 seconds. It's all weird.
No, the timing was perfect. That's the thing. It was notable because the timing was perfect, and it was exactly the same on every platform it was on, which included all of the second-gen consoles and PC.
Now, another two retro games I'll say are classics that can never be forgotten because one, so much is based on it, is Pong, and the other is Asteroids.
Yep, definitely.
I never liked Asteroids. I always stunk at that game. It's a good game, but I suck at it.
Well, I can think of some modern games now that are basically direct rip-offs of Asteroid, like Grid Wars and Pew Pew and Pew Pew 2 on tablets.
Yeah, they're the exact gameplay, the same gameplay concept.
How about
the arcade games 1943 and 44?
Oh, yeah.
I
was going to say arcade games, Galaga.
Oh, my God, we had the 43 cabinet in my common room at school.
My mom happens to be sitting in the room, and I think she would nail me to the wall if I did not say Centipede.
Centipede was great. That was awesome with the ball you had to roll. It's hard to emulate special controllers like that, though. That and like the Ikari Warriors controller, you had to rotate the knob to get the guy to turn the direction he was shooting.
I never played the arcade version of Ikari Warriors. I only ever played it on the Amiga.
Yeah, it was bullshit on any console.
Well, if I remember right, Ikari Warriors was a different name, and you were basically playing as Castro and Chavavera, I want to say. I can't think of the right name.
Oh, that I don't know.
It was basically the same story.
There was a game... let me actually name one first. Super Metroid is my all-time favorite game. That one cannot be missed. If you haven't played that, go play it. But there was a game I used to play in the arcade, and I have no idea what it was called, and I wish I did. But it was a top-down shooter, and you were like a jet or a spaceship or something, and it was like in an arena. You were on like an arena floor, and bad guys would come at you from all four compass directions, and whichever way you push the stick, the plane would point that way and fly that way. But on top of the stick there was a button, and if you held the button down, then the ship wouldn't turn and you could move like laterally and backwards without turning the ship, and then your other hand controlled the fire button. And I have no idea what the game was called, but it was so much fun, and I could play that game for hours and hours and hours. Anybody ever heard of it or played it? Does it ring a bell?
I think I played it, but I don't remember the name.
And another game I would say is a classic, and but it's a knockoff at the same time of being a classic, is Ninja Gaiden on the original NES, and I loved when they came out with the new Ninja Gaiden on Xbox, and I want to say PS2 also, that game maintained that level of, I will grind you up, spit you out, laugh at you, and wait for you to come back for more.
Yep.
Did anybody ever play Shadowgate?
Was that the adventure game?
Yeah, it was like a point-and-click adventure.
Yep.
I played that on the NES, and I ticked off about half a dozen people I knew that I went to school with because I beat it when they couldn't.
Oh, yeah, we beat it, like, as a family. Me and my brother and my mother just sat there, and, you know, click that. No, don't touch that torch. That'll kill you. And just, it was a weird game because you'd go in a room, and there'd be 50 things to click on, and 47 of them would kill you instantly. And every room was like that the whole way through the game.
I would say, you know, going back to my comment of, you know, with Ninja Gaiden, when it came back out again, that it would chew you up, spit you out, and, you know, wait for you to come, you know, back crying for more. That's one of the big things I've seen the change in gaming over the years, is games used to whip your butt relentlessly, and now they are kind of a lot gentler than they used to be.
Oh, yeah, they used to be hard. Like, did you ever play... It's a game called Lolo Land. You ever played that thing?
I remember the title.
It sounds familiar. I don't know if I ever played it.
you were this weird little monster thing, and it would go straight, and you were in this room that was almost like a grid, but with pillars, maybe? And it was top-down, and it was Nintendo NES graphics, and I'm just barely describing it, so just dots, you know, but you can imagine him in a room with a grid of pillars, and the way that you maneuvered around the room was, if you wanted to turn right, you had to stick your right hand out and grab a pillar and then let go of it when he was pointing in the correct direction. It was really tricky to get the hang of. It was actually, I never really got the hang. It was impossible. And if you ever ran into anything, he would just bounce and go back the other way, unless he ran into a bad guy. And as you went through the room, some of the pillars, as you passed through them, would turn into like a coin or something. And then as you flew through the whole puzzle, the coins would line up and turn into like a connect the dots picture, and that's how you cleared the level. And it was really strange and weird with a weird control, but it was neat. It showed you the kind of game design that people were allowed to do back in the day when they just, you know, tried anything. And it's kind of neat. If you have an emulator, it's fun to play for a few minutes.
Well, talking about games being easy, switching to a modern game for the example, World of Warcraft, when it first came out, it was taking guilds months to clear the in-game content. And then as they released newer and newer expansions, the times went from taking them to level up and get access to the content, drop from months to weeks, and then from weeks to days, and then from days to hours, and then they were done. They had it on farm mode.
I'd say the one that was a little more interesting was one of the Star Wars MMOs, where people were grinding away that thing for, you know, months and whatever, and then that first Jedi popped up, and then they later changed things and just Jedi's out the butt.
I just remember the MC Chris video. Nothing? Nobody remembers that?
The only video I remember tied to the Star Wars MMO was a Fetz Vet video.
Yeah, that was MC Chris that did that.
That was MC Chris.
That's what I said.
You let go of the button so quick it cut it off then and didn't sound like Chris.
Oh, alright, my bad. Sorry about that.
Anyone got any favorite point-and-click adventures?
Yeah, I played one back in the late 90s that a boss that I had back then gave to me, and it was, everybody knows it, but I don't remember the name. Mist? It was like Road Warrior or something like that.
Full Throttle, maybe?
Yeah, that's probably it, where you're like it's kind of dystopian future, sort of, and you're some biker dude. I think the game starts when you crash your bike or something. You have to spend the rest of the game fixing it so you can ride off.
I was never really a fan of the point and clicks.
Shame, man. So much good stuff back then.
Yeah, I was never really...
I've heard a lot of good things about the Walking Dead adventure games that have come out recently.
Yeah, people have raved about them. I haven't played them yet.
I've also heard good things about the Game of Thrones series by the same people that did the Walking Dead games. Who were they? Telltale Games.
Telltale, yeah.
I never really...
Go ahead, TJ.
I never really got into the point-and-click so much, but at least not like the point-and-click, like there's a scene, click on something, you know, in the right order and you advance. But I have always been a huge fan of the isometric style games, such as like the original Fallout games.
Yeah.
What does isometric mean? It's the game you could just go anywhere and do anything, right?
Isometric is the perspective from which it's the graphics are drawn.
It's where everything's at like a 45 degree angle, roughly.
I'm not quite sure. I'll have to Google that and see what you're talking about.
Also, I think Telltale Games did a point-and-click, possibly based around Borderlands.
Did not know about that.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Yeah, okay. Diablo and SimCity and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love some Diablo.
I never played that, but I played SimCity a bunch.
Diablo is... I love that game. Diablo 2, I played Diablo 2 for years. Literally years. And then Diablo 3 came out, played that, and found Path of Exiles literally like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And that's just like Diablo 2 on crack.
Did anybody ever play You Don't Know Jack?
I think I played games like that with some friends, but I don't think I ever played that particular one.
Yeah, that particular one was pretty outstanding. It was really fun the way it was laid out if you got three people to play it. And it would be even more fun nowadays, I think, if you know, because like with a modern big screen and just, you know, the kind of nerds we are, we can have a keyboard for everyone so you don't have to share a keyboard. I think that would be an excellent game to play at a small party.
That's something I've been finding lately. Does anyone here have a Chromecast? Anyone?
Unfortunately, the internet situation I have right now, I just do not bother with that because I do not have the bandwidth to be able to support it.
Well, no, this is the thing. One thing I always thought the Chromecast would be really good for is party games. So you have so many people in the room, they all have some kind of mobile device. You can put them all on your wireless LAN and be connected to this thing. And one of the things I found that's really good on it is there are a couple of excellent clones of Cards Against Humanity that you can play on the Chromecast. But I think it would work for a few different styles of game.
I could only see something like that working if, like, the cards were in your hand, were, like, on your phone. And when you know, clicked on whatever card you wanted to use, then it went up on the screen.
That's exactly how it works. I think the one I've used is called Cardcast. And the rules work exactly the same the way they would if you were playing with a printed deck of the cards. The game selects somebody in order and lets them see on their device all of the white cards thrown in by the other players and allows them to judge it, and then when they've judged it, that gets thrown up on the screen that the Chromecast is connected to.
Why am I the only one that recognizes that Cards Against Humanity is just apples to apples and that neither game is fun?
Because you're a weird antisocial person.
Yeah, I have to disagree because I've had a lot of fun with apples to apples, and I could just imagine, you know, with the kind of demented friends I have, Cards Against Humanity being a blast.
Cards Against Humanity is amazing. And also the advantage that the version on the Chromecast has is that it can pull down a lot of user-created decks from the net.
What do you call those things? When I was a kid, I used to go to a lot of joke shops. You know, remember joke shops? I don't know if you guys remember those. When I was a kid, I'd go to the joke shop. What did they get that thing you put in, you wear it like a ring, but on the inside of your hand, and you wind it up, and when you shake somebody's hands, it buzzes the crap out of them?
Those little shockers.
Wait, what are they called?
A hand buzzer.
No, they had a real name.
Yeah, a hand buzzer.
Hand buzzer, joy buzzer, shocker. They had like a dozen different names because a dozen different people made them.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, Lord D's phone is one of those.
I don't know, a joy buzzer sounds like it should be made by a completely different company.
Easy. This is a family show, sir.
Oh, I was waiting for somebody to say that.
I haven't cursed once, thank you. Unlike you, Pokey, ruining the family show.
Yeah, you haven't cursed once yet. You're letting the side down.
When did this become a family show?
It's not. I was just bullshit.
Exactly.
I mean, at this point, I'm just kind of seeing how long I can go without accidentally dropping one.
What's that got to do with cursing?
Nah.
Don't trust a fart, man. Just don't do it.
Funny story about that. I was having some stomach pains a couple weeks ago. I believe I was on the phone with Pegwall.
Well, that explains a lot.
I know the story.
You know the story. So I'm just sitting messing around. I don't even remember what I was doing, and I had a good fart coming, and just let it rip, and it wasn't one.
Yeah, I'm sitting there, I hear, oh, God! I was like, what? He goes, I just shit my pants.
That's always fun to hear.
Was he standing in a Target?
I had a good laugh, even though I felt bad for laughing, but there's nothing else I could have done. You weren't there.
Yeah, the bad part is it happened twice.
Nope, not asking.
In the same day?
Same day. It was bad.
What did you eat?
Well, you don't have to tell us what you ate. Just make a note of it for personal reference.
No, I had something called the Norwal virus, and it causes, like, profuse diarrhea.
Okay.
Google it. Just don't do a Google image.
Not even gonna go there.
So not only do they cause a commotion in the ocean, yeah, I'm stopping right there.
Oh god, I love that. When you've got text-to-speech running in Mumble, and you do a colon and a P at the end of your sentence, like you're doing a smiley face with a tongue out, it just says it as colon P.
I linked the Wikipedia article to what I had.
Hey, Delwyn. What's up, man?
Howdy.
How's life in the fossil farm state?
Well, I'm packing up to move to Indiana.
Did you really?
Yeah, we're leaving next week, heading back home.
Holy smokes, what caused that?
17 years of Florida heat in September.
Yeah, one of us.
Yeah, so of course we picked the week to go back when it's supposed to get down to zero. It's going to be a shock for the boy, but what the heck.
But back to Indiana? That's nuts. Why not move up the coast somewhere? Georgia's nice.
It still gets hot there.
You may find this hard to believe, but I actually like Indiana.
Yeah? You like that flat and treelessness, huh?
Well, there's plenty of trees there, man. There's got to break up the cornfield somehow.
Yeah, we put Peggy in them.
I remember driving to Ohio Linux Fest and driving through all the cornfields. And then I remembered that movie Children of the Corn. And then my drive was not so pleasant.
Hey, there is more than corn in Indiana. We have soybeans, too.
Those are lima beans, my friend.
Well, I'm going to have to call it a morning, gentlemen, because it's getting to about 5 here.
Well, come back after you take a nap, because we're going to need...
Night FX.
Night, people. Have a good one.
Happy New Year to you. See you around.
Happy New Year, all.
Have a good what?
Yeah, have a good night and Happy New Year.
Have a good one.
Later, bud.
See you. Later, man. Later, Peggy. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Take it sleazy.
Good one.
Ho-ho! Everybody should go check out New World Order.
Did he just post a show?
Yes, sir. And a video.
Oh, cheeky bastard.
Did you guys see that vlog that 330 found?
No.
I'll link it. Hang on.
I might have to drop off here, start recording, and watch this right now.
Oh, that's just not... Maybe we should live stream it.
I put it in the IRC for everyone that's in there. If you're not in IRC, you should be.
Is it worth putting in the show notes?
It's something. That's what it is.
Is it show note worthy, Pegwall? Is it show note worthy?
I'll tell you in a minute.
You know what? You click on it, look at the insanity, and judge for yourself.
Oh, I'm not in the IRC.
Well, we've got one coming up in 2.
Yeah. Mine, in fact.
And oh, mine.
This has got to go in the show notes.
And mine.
Well, now Mr. Klaatu is just updating the game here.
Hello, HPR.
What's up, Dr. Seuss?
Oh, holy...
Oh, you just stopped working for me.
Oh, that figures. Son of a...
There you go, you sound all right now.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year.
Where are you guys at?
EST.
Happy New Year!
Oh, they're shooting off fireworks. I'm going to go watch someone blow their arm off. It's going to be awesome.
Greetings. Your poor dog. Happy New Year to the Eastern region of the United States, regions of Canada, and 12 more. This includes New York, Boston, Rochester, Maryland, Washington, D.C., Detroit, Havana, and Atlanta.
Wait, which Rochester?
And Millinocket.
Millinocket, there you go.
I'm surprised that's fireworks that TJ hears going off and not meth labs.
Nope, they're doing fireworks here too.
All right, so I have to ask, how did you come up with the nickname Dr. Seuss of Porn?
Oh, good lord, someone had to ask that, right?
I'm guessing it's because you have a couple of good rhymes about it.
Oh, man, I wish I did. It was an old name off of Counter-Strike days that I just came up with because I was insanely perverse. But I didn't have any good rhymes. Actually, the only one I had was a spray I had that said I was rhyming for the hymen.
That's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's not great. So who's running outside and checking on the fireworks going off?
No one.
It wasn't fireworks. He was going to check out the meth labs blowing up.
It was Pegwall anyway.
Oh, hell, I think I'm from wherever he's at. I'm waiting for the meth labs to blow up, and I'm waiting for gunshots to go off.
Are you in Indiana as well?
Oh, no, I'm worse. I'm Southern California.
Oh, you got 3 hours to go yet, haven't you?
Yeah, but we have people picking off people in the streets. You know how it goes. West side, east side, all that shit.
Sure.
Bloods, Crips, and the KKK.
So how is Bakersfield these days?
Oh, Bakersfield's fantastic. I haven't been there in a while. Actually, that is a very enlightened society compared to where I'm from. And you know what? I have to mess with this push-to-talk key because it is screwing me up, so I'll be right back.
Did you change it to, like, the grave key or some key that you don't ever use, like enter?
Yeah, you know what? Somehow I put it to my Windows key, which is not flying.
Well, you can do your Windows key and the Alt key at the same time, or Alt and Shift, or what you can use more than one key.
Unless you're like me and you actually use that stupid Meta key for something.
Well, I discovered you can use Alt Shift to paste into like a terminal. I didn't know that. You can use like Alt Shift V and Alt Shift C for copy. I had no idea.
You don't use console, you use GTK.
I'm a shift insert kind of man.
You can say that again.
I'm a shift insert kind of man.
He said you could, he didn't say you should.
I did it anyway. You can't tell me what to do.
Go to bed, Pegwall.
Now I'll be up for a while.
Oh, somebody tell me to go to bed. I'm exhausted.
Go to bed, Pokey.
Yeah, go to bed, man.
I spent all day building transoceanic fiber optic cables. I'm exhausted.
Holy crap, Kerbal Space Program's come a long way.
What did you just say?
Yeah, I'm guessing that fell flat.
I didn't understand it. Sorry.
No, I was making a reference to the Kerbal Space Program.
I don't know what that is.
Oh my god.
Yeah, what the hell?
I said sorry. Jeez, lay off. What? All right, fine. Talk to everybody else, and I'll catch up.
All right, now I feel bad. I'm sorry, guys.
Pokey doesn't generally partake in video games.
Don't feel sorry. Enlighten him.
All right, it's like NASA, but with, I was going to say very awkward individuals, but that's kind of redundant. So it's like NASA.
Oh, right on.
It's like if NASA had designed a sort of Minecraft-type game to build stuff.
Oh.
Basically, if NASA was competent.
What is the name of the game?
Kerbal Space Program. Kerbal. K-E-R-B-A-L.
And what's the platform?
It's on Steam, so it's PC. Or Linux.
Basically, the objective is to build a rocket and get to other planets and build basically like bases and satellites and eventually just spread as far as you can.
Got it.
If I'm not mistaken, it's 25% off right now through tomorrow.
Somebody needs a gift.
Not me, man. I wouldn't wouldn't fire up a Windows machine to play it.
You don't need to. It runs on Linux.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah, it runs pretty well, too.
Aw, are we really hating Windows right now? I thought this was an equal opportunity, you know, podcast.
Oh, it is. It is.
Everyone has an equal opportunity to hate Windows.
Oh, my God.
I have to hate it every day, so.
Oh, man, yeah, I have to use it at work, and it's so frustrating.
Welcome back, Klaatu.
Okay, I'm with you guys. I like Linux a lot. I do use Windows for a lot of stuff. The only thing I am completely against is Mac, but that's me.
See, I'd be more likely to get a Mac than I would to run Windows.
Oh, not me. Man, I've tried Macs a couple times, and they're just... I don't know, man. Everything about them is just awkward and feels misplaced, and it's... I don't know. It just... It's like it's trying to get you to behave, and I don't like that.
Thank you, Pokey. That's exactly how I feel when trying to troubleshoot those. Anytime anyone has a Mac at work, there's a hesitation when someone asks, "Can you help me with this?" I went, "Oh, okay, well, maybe."
Yeah, that's about it.
Well, it's gotten where now at work I use a Windows machine. Some of the other technicians use an iPad. Thank God I don't have to use an iPad.
Do you break your foot off in their ass? That's my question. I mean, that would be the ultimate question. Oh, I'm using an iPad? That's great. Well, then I'll just screw up your car, too, and put one pedal in it, as the old joke says.
Well, there was that one custom car back in the 60s. It didn't have any pedals or a steering wheel. It just had that one lever in the middle, and you did like a joystick, and you could drive with that.
Kaboom.
Well, I'd have an iPad if what I did didn't need a serial port on the computer we use to dispatch.
Valid point.
I'll tell you what, though I have to use Windows every day at work, and while it makes me hate Windows more and more all the time, we have a couple of in-house programs and a couple of in-house programmers, and those guys are so good at what they do, and those programs are so nice to use. And unfortunately, they're Windows programs, but you know they're only ever going to be useful to where I work, so it doesn't really matter much. But those guys are good, and it's really refreshing to use a really well built piece of software.
Well, it's always a rarity, no matter which platform you're using. Even though Linux has some fantastic programs and they're fortunate from the community. But you're right. If there's a Windows programmer that knows their stuff, it's much better than anything commercial-wise out there.
Yep, it's just Windows itself is such a giant turd.
Windows is horrible. Absolutely horrible.
And I'll apologize, you know, for myself for the Windows bashing. I always try not to, you know, say bad things or you know, if you don't have anything nice, don't say anything at all. And I try to live by that. And I'll stop saying bad things about Windows when I don't have to use it anymore.
No, you're perfectly welcome to do that. I mean, that's the thing is we all have stuff we hate. And, you know, to be honest, Windows is not the greatest thing out there. It's we grew up on Windows, and unfortunately, it's let us all down severely.
I think that's the biggest problem with like Windows and well, mostly Windows, I guess, it is kind of forced upon a lot of us, whether we want to use it or not. It's sort of hanging out there, and you kind of run into it whether you want to or not.
Sell your podcast post there, buddy.
Why, thank you very much. Video feed now, so people can watch as well as listen.
Just FYI, your video feed's broken. I stomped all over you, Soundy.
I said way to start off the new year and up the game, not Klaatu.
Thank you. Yeah, I figured since I was... away from home, maybe some video stuff at last would be worthwhile. Plus, I haven't, at this new job, I don't really get to mess around with video as much as I used to, so I wanted to keep in practice.
Well, your video feed's broken there, bud.
Sounds like I need practice with RSS as well. I'll fix that, thanks.
It's all right. I'm just watching you porn, so, you know, whenever you hit that up.
Yeah, both that of
I
the
cannot help with, or will not help with.
Both the Atom feed and the RSS feed don't have a post. I'm guessing it's your bash script that you post.
Yeah, and I just really quickly modified it to include the WebM files, so I probably screwed something up.
Bugbusters for the win.
So, Father Finch and John Doe Locksmith are names I don't believe I've ever seen before or heard on a podcast.
I know who John Smith Locksmith is, I'll bet. No, John Doe Locksmith, I'll bet I know who that is. I think I met him.
You did.
All right. Hey, how you doing?
I don't know. It's been about a year.
You know what? For this is an interesting data point. I had the lockpicks set that you sold me at whatever conference we did meet at in my backpack. It was in a pocket that if I was packing to go to New Zealand, I kind of forgot it. Went through 4 different airport securities and got that lockpick Smith all the way from the U.S. lockpick set all the way from the U.S. to New Zealand without any trouble.
Is this my way of saying I told you so?
Maybe. I don't know. I kind of expected, I mean, they're sharp, pointy objects, and the TSA is very grumpy these days. I really expected more trouble.
In general, what it comes down to is tools under 7 inches, which you'll notice that those are under 7 inches, just under 7 inches, are perfectly legal.
Oh, that interesting. Is awesome.
Very cool.
To know.
Well, it worked.
I thought that lockpick sets general were illegal to have on your person, though.
Lockpick sets themselves are perfectly legal, as I usually say, unless you are speeding. It is illegal to possess criminal tools. They can be deemed criminal tools if you're currently committing a criminal act.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, when I came to Canada, I had a Slim Jim in the trunk of my car, and they confiscated my Slim Jim, as well as my lockpick set that I had gotten from the Ford dealership that I used to work for, or that I was given from the Ford dealership I used to work for.
The other thing that you can try on that is to have a business card that says that you in some way need it. Certain IT professions, for example, can have an excuse for having it. In Canada, not so sure about the laws, but in general, if you seem like you could have it, there's a good reason you should have it. Places aren't going to mess with you.
The laws here state that the only people who can possess lockpicking utilities and stuff like that are locksmiths themselves and sometimes law enforcement, but that's different depending on the local regional law enforcement agents.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I'd probably petition to have changed.
Yeah, not planning on messing with anything that deals with politics.
Well, you know, the Pirate Party is there for you. Sometimes.
I just figure I'll just smuggle it in.
So did you guys in the U.S. hear about the Internet Party at all that Kim.com was doing here in New Zealand during the elections?
No.
Yeah, so during the New Zealand elections, which happened, like, I don't know, say 4 months ago, Kim.com, who you probably do know, well, he's the guy who does, like, or did, what was it, Mega Upload, Mega File, what was that service that he had called?
Yeah, Mega Upload was one of them. He's done several.
Yeah, so he did that, and of course the U.S. invaded, like, his farm or whatever in New Zealand, somehow. I still don't have any idea how that was, you know.
Yeah, Team
legal.
America!
Yeah, it must have been exactly like that. So he's like fighting a bunch of legal battles right now. And as part of his strategy, I guess, he decided to create his own political party here in New Zealand, and he called it the Internet Party. He wasn't running for anything, but he was basically backing this other person to run. It was pretty bizarre.
Liquid democracy.
That's one of the interesting things here in New Zealand. They don't just have, like, two political parties. They have, like, just a bunch. Like during the election, I imagine there were, like, 8 or 10 different parties running for prime minister.
How do you corrupt them all?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not enough into New Zealand politics yet to understand how they're all completely evil and devoid of ethics.
Well,
you'd think probability-wise, it just wouldn't happen.
more than likely it's the majority. The, you know, the top two or three are probably the corrupt ones.
Yeah, probably. I mean, realistically. So I guess it's been like about a year now since the Steam client for Linux came out. Does anyone have any feelings on how or whether Linux has been affected by that at all?
Well, what do you mean affected by it?
I mean affected by it, like either positively, negatively, or at all. Like, I mean, has it had an impact on Linux at all?
Well, I know from my own point of view, I'm trying to exclusively game now on Linux using the Steam client. And though, you know, it is, they are DRM games, I'm trying to buy only Linux-compatible games, especially during this last sale. So just, I mean, from an anecdotal point of view.
Ahoy, me hearties.
Hey, handsome pirate.
I'm back again for a while.
I don't know that I can really tell that it's had an impact on anything. It's just an outlet that we can get games on Linux easier.
Yeah, that's kind of been my impression so far. I mean, both you and Father Finch, it does seem to be just kind of, yeah, it's convenient to have around, but it doesn't feel, at least so far, that it's had like a, I don't know, I haven't really seen anyone taking into consideration the fact that the Steam client exists in terms of like programming for Linux or, you know, using Linux or anything like that.
Well, there haven't been any really big like blockbuster style games to come out and come through the Steam client for Linux.
I go ahead.
I was gonna say, so far, every time I've attempted to run the Steam client, it's crashed, and S-tracing it hasn't helped very much. It's been, it just shows a bunch of function calls that I can't see because they're not open source.
I'm running it on Slackware, and I run it on Fedora, and it seems to work pretty well on both of those platforms. I have not run it on the default platform of Ubuntu, strangely enough. But yeah, it seems to work okay.
32 or 64?
64-bit Fedora here.
I think it does take multi-lib. I mean, I think it does require 32 libraries, so I can't remember. I think it does require 32-bit.
Now I am curious, Klaatu, what are you playing?
That's the weird thing. I don't actually play games all that often, but I found a couple of like indie titles, like Shadowrun, which is like an RPG sort of cyberpunk thing, and Transistor, which is kind of a, I don't know, isometric action-y kind of platformer cyberpunk thing. Those are the two that come to mind right now.
Didn't you do Torchlight?
You know, I played that from Humble Bundle. I've not actually bothered putting that on Steam yet, although, as I understand, my Humble Bundle purchase included a Steam key, so I can purchase that via, you're add it to Steam via that key.
By the way, Klaatu, long time no see.
Yeah, I've been busy in New Zealand doing work things.
Not talking about work things. I want to actually talk to you about social media.
Oh, good gosh.
Why, man? I mean, I understand a little bit, but I never figured you'd be one to succumb.
I really tried not to. I mean, I figured when I first got to New Zealand and sort of the impact hit me that I had no local Linux friends, you know, and no easy, and that I was in a completely different time zone than everyone else, like all of you guys. I was like, well, maybe I'll just like get on like Linux questions and hang out there a lot more, you know. And I tried to kind of like, I don't know, find new sites to kind of go to and maybe run into people that I knew, and it just wasn't working. So finally, I just decided I might as well just jump on board the Google Plus and the Twitter thing and see if that will help me keep in touch better. And so far, I think it's worked.
ARC wasn't working for you? Was the time difference just too much?
Yeah, the time difference was really making it inconvenient, and at work, they have the network completely locked down, mostly because of, you know, the MPAA, but there's also a company that does a lot of comic book movies, which I won't name by name, but they do a lot of comic book movies. They're a big company. They're really, really paranoid, especially after the Sony hack. So the network is just insanely locked down, so I can't get out like to do really anything. So there's no chance of doing that at work. So yeah, it's just IRC was not convenient anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hear you. Aren't you the one locking down the network? Unlock it, man.
No, I'm not. I do different things.
Clotilde, I'm surprised you didn't go to like GNU Social or something like that instead of like Twitter.
Don't know what that is.
There, he just said he tried to go to where all his friends were all at, and who's on GNU Social?
That's always been my thing about that, but I keep getting more and more pressure recently to actually get on there. GNU Social, Klaatu, is the old Identica platform.
Oh, yeah, that's what I looked for. I looked for Identica, and it would, I guess it got replaced by a protocol, and then I couldn't find the place where that protocol was being implemented. So, okay, so it's GNU Social is what it's called now.
That's GNU Social now. One of the sites is, if you want to grab an account real quick, is quitter.se.
Quitter.se.
Yep. And of course, if you go over and look at the GNU website there, you can find GNU Social down there.
Okay, cool. I will check that out.
So, Clato, you're on. I just found you on Twitter, I believe.
Well, be careful, because there were some fake accounts. Like when Twitter first came out, someone was like spoofing me, from what I understand. So it has to be like not Klaatu, or else it's not Klaatu.
It's not Klaatu in Wellington, New Zealand.
Oh yeah, that would be me.
Klaatu, there's also the one I just posted into the Mumble chat. There, several of us are on that already, and
oh cool, okay.
A couple of clients work with it. Mustard is an Android client that works with it. And Status is a client that I used to use and love, and then it stopped working, and they've just recently got an update, and I'm not sure if they work again or not, but I would imagine that they did, since they just updated for the first time after a couple of years, I think.
Cool, very cool. I mean, the thing about social media is that, I mean, I never really had anything against it, I just didn't really care for it at all, and I had no interest in it, and I didn't understand what purpose it served, but yeah, I guess given the ability to HTTP out into something versus not being able to IRC somewhere, that's kind of been the deal breaker for me, and I imagine that was probably the appeal for a lot of people.
So are you able to use the various social networks at work?
Strangely enough, yes. There's no problem there. I guess you can't block, you know, Google, especially Google, but also Twitter, because like earthquakes here tend to happen. And strangely enough, like most of the earthquake information gets tweeted out. So it's kind of like they've really, you know, they're kind of indispensable. And no matter how tightly a network is locked down, it seems like those two sites especially are just going to be open no matter what.
Well, if you wind up getting on the GNU Social thing, I'm on that now.
So, at one point, to get around an IRC block, I wound up setting up a server that would basically forward IRC to Facebook. I set up a Facebook account just for this, and I could actually basically send Facebook messages via the web UI to that Facebook account, and then it would forward them onto IRC for me.
But how did the IRC get back to Facebook?
Basically, I set up Bilby and
and
all that.
That's pretty cool.
Actually, have you tried any of the newer web clients, Klaatu?
I don't know. I tried the one, I think, on Freenode. Like it was it's like the embedded web client, and I tried. What is it? Not XChat, the one in Firefox. Neither of those work.
Okay, the one I would try is Kiwi. Hang on, let me get the Kiwi address for it.
Okay.
How apropos.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, there's this fine line. I don't want to lose my job either. It's a really good job. So, I mean, I'm not so interested in, you know, social network at work that I'm going to lose my job over it. But, yeah.
There it is, and I'll stick it in the show notes too. I actually, this is an open source project, and you can embed it in a website, and it's an HTML5 based IRC client. Nice. I actually put it on my website, and it's just a much, much nicer client. It works really well for having people jump into like the IRC server that we use for the stream that I'm on for my show.
Cool. That's great to know.
How did you handle it? Was there like withdrawals from IRC?
No, there was, I mean, New Zealand for the first couple of months was pretty exciting and work was pretty exciting. So I kind of, you know, it's like I sort of turned a blind eye to it because there was so much else to look at. But then, yeah, after a couple of months, yeah, it really hit me. I was just like, wow, this is scary. I know, like, all the people I used to hang out with at conferences, I'm not going to see them anytime soon. So, yeah, it was a bit scary for a while.
That's kind of, it happened to me at my last job where using IRC at work started getting scary because everything started looking suspicious to everyone. And I was just not comfortable using it. And it was hard, man. I had like withdrawals from IRC and from not hanging out there. And then it just, like, I just couldn't do it anymore. And when I get home, I really haven't got the time. So, you know, I haven't been on IRC in like, in probably so long that my name has probably expired. Which is like embarrassing, but and it really sucks because you get disconnected, and then you have to make do with the people in the real world, which is hard to do sometimes.
It really is.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.